Welcome, welcome, curious souls, to the Macabre Emporium, your sanctuary for the unusual, the mysterious, and the appalling.
Step through our cryptic doorway into a world where secrets whisper and enigmas come to life.
I'm David.
And I'm Sarah.
Together, we're your custodians of the macabre, guiding you through tales that defy the ordinary.
Discover the untold stories, from lesser-known cases of true crime to the bizarre events that captivate us.
Join us on a journey to the shadows where the mainstream fades and the extraordinary beckons.
So whether you seek the bizarre, the eerie, or the chillingly obscure,
you're in for a treat here at Macabre Emporium.
Welcome back to Macabre Emporium. This is episode 94.
And if this is your first time joining us, because I don't have something witty to say this week, welcome!
Welcome!
So, yeah, this is a David-sode this week, and also at the end of this week, we're going to go have some fun doing the ghost hunts.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm super excited about that.
I know you are.
I know you are.
I'm excited to go to the third floor. It was right. The only one I didn't go to last time.
I'm excited to use the whole bag of goodies now.
I know, he's got them all packed and ready to go.
Yep.
Bought a new patch for the backpack. Yep, the
Sons of Salen patch.
Sons of Samhain.
I almost said that just to mess with you. Just to see the look on your face with me saying it wrong.
That's why I had to say it all stupid.
But it's got like a scarecrow head on the middle. It looks like a biker patch, basically. Mm-hmm. And it has like a scarecrow head in the middle.
Yeah, it's cool. It's
super cool, though. They have some pins, too, by the way.
I know. I've seen them. They were at the, the Oddities?
Oddities and Curiosities Expo or something. Yeah. Flip those two words. I don't remember. Every time we ever talk about it, I always flip the damn words on it.
It was one of the two.
Yeah.
But yeah, they were there. They had their buttons and patches.
Yeah, but I think there was like a bunch of people around us. We weren't able to go over there and take a look at the stuff firsthand.
This is true.
But yeah, if you're looking for like patches that are like t-shirts or buttons of like goofy cryptid stuff, they have all sorts of stuff. Like there's one for Churubusco on it.
Did they have a Beastabusco?
Yeah, they did on the website. I almost bought it.
Oh.
But those patches aren't super cheap. That one was like $16.
I mean, it's good quality.
Yeah,
it printings. Is. Well, so, not printing, it's embroidery.
Yeah, I know with it being a patch, it was going to be embroidered, and I know it wasn't going to be cheap, but
yeah.
My expectations on how clean the embroidery is on it, it blew me away when I took it out of the envelope, so it's definitely worth the price on it. There's a bigger one of that same patch I got. They're sold out of it, but it's like $45.
Probably to put on like a coat.
Yeah, that's what it's for.
But yeah, Monsterology or Monsterologist.
Monsterologist.com. Yeah. If you want some really cool patches and stuff to look like they got iron-ons. They have hook and loop because you can't use Velcro because that's an actual technical brand name. But, you know, everybody calls it Velcro. I'm calling it Velcro because...
It's Velcro.
Yeah, but, you know, they can't call it that.
It's right.
Hook and loop is what it is.
Yeah.
The generic name for it. But other than that, we don't have much else going on. We're still waiting to hear from the Stimson Hospital at the time we record this episode.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm looking to hopefully hear from them here soon, so we can possibly do a live stream there, or maybe if the crowd isn't too big, Friday, maybe we might do that. Who knows? We'll see if I'm up to it, if we have enough battery life, or in the biggest part, if we got a signal, because the building's made out of limestone where we're going.
Or if we want to.
Well.
If we're into what we're doing, maybe not.
Yep, I might just forget just because I'm so super focused or somebody's talking my ear off.
Or you're talking someone's ear off.
Yep. It
goes both ways there.
Yep. That I might just forget. But, you know, there's going to be video evidence. There's going to be audio evidence I got to go through. So you guys are going to hear and probably see some of that if you post it on YouTube.
Yeah, or on the Facebook group.
Yep. There has been a request for... If we could look over all that stuff on the Twitch channel that you sit in and watch and give your own commentary also about because you were there too, obviously. So people want to hear from you too also about it.
I'll be there.
So for this week, I'm doing some kind of history, true crimey type thing.
True crime. Get out of my territory, sir.
This is weird true crime. Not really weird true crime. It's oddball true crime, which is my wheelhouse. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Well, maybe not oddball, but I mean, it is. It's not like huge crimes were committed. It's a whole reversal thing on that.
Interesting.
Yeah. So we're going to be talking about Operation Flagship today.
Okay. So I have no clue.
I figured you didn't. Because I didn't know this existed. And it's actually inspired a couple different things. So you're ready to get started?
I am.
All right. Let's get going. Like any big city with a major NFL team, many people who live there have season tickets. During the 1980s in Washington, D.C., getting season tickets for the Redskins was nearly impossible. The years-long wait list, and we're talking like a 25-year wait list to get season tickets for the Washington Redskins.
Holy shit.
To understand how much I have no clue about fucking sports.
Yes.
Until I started looking into this, I assumed that the Washington Redskins played in the state of Washington.
They didn't?
No, they're in Washington, D.C.
Oh.
My entire life, I have always just assumed it was in the state of Washington because of being the Washington Redskins.
I couldn't have told you any different. I don't know.
Now, before somebody gets on me about, oh, they're the Washington Commanders. Not at the time that this story happened. So they're going to be called the Redskins for this story.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's for historical accuracy.
Yeah.
But anyhow. But for 3,000 lucky fans, they would receive a letter from a hot new cable network, Flagship International Sports Television, stating they had won 2 tickets to a Redskins game against the Bengals from Cleveland and a chance to win tickets to Super Bowl 20. Sounds too good to be true, right? Free tickets 10 days before Christmas? Well, it was because the only thing they would win is a one-way ticket to jail.
What?
Mm-hmm. So, Operation Flagship was actually run by a task force of sorts from inside the U.S. Marshal's Office, known as the Fugitive Investigation Strike Team. In October 1979, Attorney General Benjamin Cavallet turned over the responsibility of investigating and monitoring certain fugitives from the FBI to the U.S. Marshals. 105 Marshal deputies would make up FIST, an enforcement specialist to oversee investigating and apprehending fugitives in their districts. They would focus on what was considered Class 1 offenders, which included federal prison escapees, bail jumpers, parole violators, probation violators, people wanted for rape, murder, arson, all sorts of violent crimes and whatnot.
So the bad guys.
Yep.
The real bad guys.
I did try to see what they considered as Class 1, but I could not find a list of sources. Not even on their website.
So wait, a Class 1 included bail jumpers and murderers?
Yes.
So you could literally jump bail on some stupid shit like a parking ticket.
Well, you usually don't go to jail and get bail for a parking ticket.
I mean, if you let it rack up long enough.
If you have an outstanding warrant for it, yes, and you go to jail and get bonded out, then you're jumping bail.
Right. But literally, to put them in the same category as somebody that's, like, murdered or raped?
I'm pretty sure this is more, like, on a federal level than, like, a city level where you would have an e-parking ticket.
Okay.
FIST would actually run 19 sting operations focusing on catching fugitives over a set amount of time. Operation Flagship would be the brainchild of Tobias Roach, Chief Deputy of the U.S. Marshals, and Herbert M. Rutherford III while they were having dinner and noted the support of the Washington Redskins and how difficult it was to get season tickets. Like, as I was saying in my intro, that it was like a 25-year wait list to get season tickets for Redskin home games.
So basically, let's dangle a fucking treat out there that is irresistible.
Yep, pretty much. As I was saying, they would use the hype of the Redskins for this sting operation named Operation Flagship, which was also part of the name of the fake cable company.
Okay.
So they actually had a little bit of fun with certain words and last names and whatnot to make this believable, and I'll explain that along the way.
Okay.
Operation Flagship would be approved to be ran on December 15th, 1985, 10 days before Christmas.
Can I ask before you go further, this TV station, did they make an actual TV station for this?
They kind of, but not really.
Like, not a fully syndicated, like a local
station? It wasn't like a fully, you know, it was considered a cable company, which unlike today, in the 1980s, cable television was like big money then.
Right.
To have. That was a rich people thing.
Word.
Or satellite, you know, the big fucking 12-foot satellite dish on top of the roof or 8 feet out in the yard.
Yeah.
They would send out 3,000 letters to the last known address of known fugitives that they had won 2 tickets for the upcoming Bengals versus Redskins games and a chance to win 10 Redskins season tickets and also be entered into a raffle for an all-expenses-paid trip to New Orleans for Super Bowl 20. And were also invited to a free brunch to the morning of the game. Tobias Roach would have some fun with the fake names to make it all look legit. The invitations were signed by I. Michael Detnow, which Detna is wanted spelled backwards.
Oh, no shit. Okay.
Oh, hold on. There's a couple more. There's a couple little more fun things that they did with this. To claim their prize, these fugitives would have to use a special telephone number to confirm that they would be attending. A marshal acting as a phone operator would be redirected to flagship business manager Marcus Cran's office.
Good afternoon, Mr. Cran.
I received a letter from you for a brunch on December 15th.
Did it say that you had won two complimentary tickets to the Redskins and Cincinnati Bengals game?
Yes, sir.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Which is NARC spelled backwards.
Crayons?
Well, Cran.
Cran, okay.
The phone operator would also put them on hold while they were confirming their identity, and they would have, for their wait music, I Fought the Law playing.
We're going to load you up on a bus and take you on down to the stadium and have a good day on us.
Jesus.
Operation Flagship was also so convincing that a local television station sent a cease and desist order through their attorney to Flagship International stating that it didn't have the proper license to operate in the district. Which is interesting because Flagship International Sports Television is the full name, which is FIST.
FIST.
Yep. The same acronym for this task force that was specific to capturing fugitives like this.
What was it? Fugitive what?
It was Fugitive Investigation Strike Team.
That's what it was. Wow, they just put all those little fucking gems in there, didn't they?
Yep. The marshals would use agents from outside the D.C. area to help lower the chance of any of the agents of the D.C. area being spotted by known fugitives and blowing the whole lid. Because actually two people that were confirmed were on the top 10 wanted list for the D.C. area.
Oh, shit.
Did show up. They would decorate the Washington Convention Center with balloons being, maroon and gold, the Redskins colors. They would have a giant banner welcoming them. With the Redskins helmets on both sides and say, welcome to Flagship International Sports Television on this big giant banner in the pictures I saw of this. And they would also have another agent dressed up as like the chief from the Redskins mascot walking around. They also had the San Diego chicken walking around.
Oh, God.
But one thing they did say that they did have was Santa Claus, which they're like, no, get him out of here. They're going to hate me having Santa Claus here. So they replaced him with the San Diego chicken because, in the 80s, the San Diego chicken was still a big deal at all sporting events. And they would also have agents dressed as convention center maintenance crews, just pick cleaning, emptying trash cans, sweeping the floor, all sorts of stuff, just monitoring the crowd. I mean, San Diego chicken had a gun. The chief Redskin, he had a gun.
They're just like tucked down in their costumes.
Just imagine if you had been one of these fugitives and you figured it out what was going on, and then you get dropped by the San Diego chicken and then get put in handcuffs by a guy in a chicken costume.
Oh, man.
You'd never live that down.
I mean, but like, if you're going to go out, what an epic way to go out.
Right.
Like, to me, that would be funny as fuck. I would love to be a bystander just watching that shit happen.
Yeah, I mean, it'd just be like, you guys aren't going to believe this. Hey, honey, you're not going to believe what happened today. Like, I got to see a criminal get arrested by the San Diego chicken. It was amazing.
That'd be one of those things that, like, unless you actually saw it or back in that time had a camcorder.
Right, which not everybody walked around with.
And had gotten that on videotape. Like, that would have been hard to explain and have people believe you.
Right. Oh, I mean, there is video from this whole operation of them walking around. Like, they made it look like it was legit cable company. So they had people recording, footage of it. So be like, oh, yeah, it being like, oh, yeah, it's going to be promotional stuff, blah, 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 is my guess.
I'm saying if a chicken, doing a chicken costume had to take somebody down.
Right. They would also have the female U.S. Marshal agents from outside the district come in and pose as usherettes as well, doing cheers for the Redskins, just making all this huge fanfare and everything, making it look legit as possible. And they even played a huge role into all of this. Because why they came up with this idea is because they're not going to expect wanting fugitives to come to a football game armed.
Right.
They just won a huge prize. They're optimistic. They're having a great time. It's like, yeah, I get to go to Redskins game. This is going to be awesome. So they're off guard. you know, at this point. So, and that was the biggest driving thing about this, was being able to arrest this many fugitives in this amount of time and with little to no resistance, basically. So with all this put into place, agents would actually rehearse in the early hours of that morning that the, you know, Operation Flagship was to take place, which was a great thing because they were supposed to start showing up at 9 a.m. They had people showing up an hour early at 8 a.m.
Oh.
So they were already super tired at that point, and they had a long day ahead of them. So when the fugitives would arrive at the Washington Convention Center, they would be greeted by the usher cheerleaders, you know, chanting on the Redskins as it was a game day. They also had, like I forgot to mention, another part was that they had video footage of the Redskins playing football on the TV monitors placed out to it. You know, they went all out to make this look like a legit thing.
Huh.
So when they, like, as I was saying, as the fugitives would arrive, they would be greeted and checked in by their ID that they were instructed to when they called in the phone number to confirm they were attending. An agent would call up to a control room where they would be confirmed to be who they said they were. If they were a known violent fugitive, they were given a code word of double winner. Double winners were wanted for mostly for aggravated assault, murder, and robbery.
Oof.
They were also given a name tag and were coded by color, but all sources never stated what the code was. But my guess best was that double winners were given something like red or yellow or something bright to show that, hey, this is a dangerous criminal with a name tag. And this was like the, you know, old school, hello, my name is name tag basically on it. So like I was telling you about how the female agents had a big critical role to play.
Yes.
So after they were checked in, they would be ushered upstairs into the convention center by the female ushers, you know, posing as, you know, Redskin cheerleaders. And then these guys are all like, hey, yeah, all right, you know, because they got one of the cheerleaders on their arm. Well, what she's really doing is she's checking to see if they have weapons. She's being, you know, arm around them, hugging them, like, it's your lucky day, all this stuff, you know, patting him on the back, all this shit, you know, seeing if he's got any kind of weapons on him at this point, just so, you know.
And they were none the wiser.
Pretty much, yes.
Wow.
If they had any guests with them, they would actually be separated from them into a separate room where Agent Louis Kelly, the Chief Enforcement of Operations for the U.S. Marshals, would address the winners in groups of about 10 to 20, it varied. And he had a special surprise for them. Well, that special surprise would actually be Special Operations Group, which is basically the SWAT team for the U.S. Marshals, as they would rush into the room, weapons drawn, to arrest these fugitives and usher them out quickly to the real prize, a one-way nonstop trip to the Washington, D.C. jail.
Wow. I would love to have seen their faces.
Yeah, I can show you a video later.
Okay.
So, because in the video, the way it shows them rushing in there, it's like there's this guy, he's got a grin up on his face almost. He's just like, God damn it. All this stuff, and he's like, yeah, they got me finally, you know. He's like, he knew exactly what was really going on at that point, you know. He's like, he knew he'd been had, there's no point in fighting it. And then there was a couple guys, I honestly think in one clip that they showed, I think the guy probably just tripped over his own feet and they went to the floor from what it looked like in the angle from what I can see. But there were one or two in the, you know, montage they showed that he, one or two actually did fight back.
Huh.
But a majority of them just went peacefully and quietly.
Because, I mean, what can you do when you're surrounded by armed fucking police officers?
Right? Yeah, your mood would just went from 100 to 0 real fast with that, you know. Bob Leshorn of the U.S. Marshals would recall in one of the videos that I did watch on this, one of the fugitives would shout out from the bus asking if they still get to go to the game. In total, 119 fugitives would be arrested during Operation Flagship, and two of them did turn themselves in after receiving the letters. They must have figured it out from the wording or whatnot, that it's like, this is a scam, this something seems fishy.
How many invitations were sent out?
3,000.
And only 119?
Oh, yep, only 119.
Plus the two that turned themselves in? Huh.
So between the 119 fugitives showed up, they have a total of 15 warrants for assault, 5 for robbery, 6 for burglary, 4 for escape, 19 for bond default or bail violation, 18 for narcotics violations, 59 for probation or parole violations, and 41 for a variety of other charges from rape to arson and forgery.
Damn, a smorgasbord of How do you say that word?
Smorgasbord.
Smorgasbord.
Where's what we're going with? Because apparently neither one of us can say it correctly.
It's going to be the S word to go with your W word.
To go with the W word.
Mm-hmm.
The cost of Operation Flagship was minimal compared to the millions spent on higher profile people like mobster Whitey Bulger. Operation Flagship only cost $22,000 to run in 1985, coming out to around $64,000 today in 2025.
That's still pretty cheap for the fucking production they put on.
Yeah. It would actually cost an average of $1,295 or $3,786 today for an individual arrest outside of the sting operations like Operation Flagship. So they went from spending over $1,000 to a few hundred dollars per arrest that they made.
Huh.
If I remember correctly, I forgot to put it in here. I think it came out to be in like today's money around like $300 per arrest during Operation Flagship.
That they made or that they spent?
That was the spending costs.
Gotcha. Probably paperwork processing and shit at the jail.
And other logistics stuff like fuel and stuff and whatnot like that. So when word got out about Operation Flagship internationally, there was other agencies from around the world calling the U.S. Marshal's office like, hey, can we get more details on how you did that? You know, because it was so effective to capture this many people in such amount of time. Other law enforcement agencies around the world started conducting their own Operation Flagships of sorts.
They wanted to replicate it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But this is also not the first time the U.S. Marshal's office conducted sting operations like this.
No?
Nope. There's two other ones that I could find, but there's not a whole lot of information on them. Just little snippets about what they were. So they ran Puno Airlines, which operated out of Miami International Airport, promising a free flight to the Bahamas for the weekend and $350 spending money. Two of the arrested fugitives never connected that Puno Airlines was a sting operation. One wanted to reschedule his flight while he was in jail, and another begged to take care of this next week so that she could enjoy their vacation first.
God.
Now, I didn't look up this guy's last name's pronunciation. I'm not going to bother because he's a Nazi sympathizer.
Oh, no.
But Konrad Kallias, which also was arrested in this operation and never stood trial for his war crimes during World War II from becoming a part of the Nazi security police in Latvia. And then I looked a little bit more into this guy out of curiosity, and even up to his death, he fucking walked free, unfortunately. Yeah. He was deported from the U.S.
Good.
But he unfortunately got to walk free and waste our fucking air.
Not so good.
Yeah. They also conducted an operation called Mr. Zip in the state of Virginia, where an agent would pose as a mailman needing to delivering a package to a wanted fugitive's last known address. Once they confirmed that fugitive still lived there by using their ID, that he told him he needed to see an ID to confirm that, you know, that's just them, this is their address, blah, 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 and all that. The agent, posing as a mailman, would tip his hat, wishing him a good day or whatever to make it more convincing. And the tipping of the mailman's hat was a signal, yep, he's in there. And then once he'd leave, U.S. Marshals would go storming in there and arrest the fugitive.
Huh.
Operation Flagship also inspired an episode of The Simpsons in Season 9 where Homer gets arrested for unpaid parking tickets. And more recently, as last year, M. Night Shyamalan drew inspiration from Operation Flagship for the 2024 movie Trap, where Mark Wahlberg plays a serial killer and has to escape a concert he has taken his daughter to before he is arrested.
Huh.
But that is Operation Flagship. I know it's going to be a little short episode this week, but we got a lot of stuff to do before Friday night. I got to double check batteries and make sure all the stuff that has rechargeable batteries is charged and all the memory cards are empty. So
triple check them batteries.
Yep. Make sure you got everything in the bag.
That's interesting. Yep. Okay. So kind of in that same setup, like when cops used to be a big thing back in the day,
right?
I used to absolutely love watching the dudes get busted in the hotel rooms that were like picking up the prostitute, but the prostitute was a cop undercover.
Right.
Those were my favorite.
Yeah. I mean, it's basically the same thing. And then, you know, the Catch a Predator was also the same thing too.
Yeah. I miss that show.
Right. But Operation Flagship is basically the grandfather of all that kind of thing, basically.
That's crazy. I feel like we just saw something on the news about this not super long ago.
What, Operation Flagship?
Maybe not that, but something similar to that. We might have.
And, you know, if you see anything about sting operations like this where promises are made for grand prizes and whatnot, Operation Flagship is where it all started.
Huh. That's interesting. If you get invited to something like that, just go ahead and go. Do your time. Right.
Now, if they try and pull that in Detroit, they're going to be like, yeah, fucking right.
I'm sure I'm sure Detroit people would still go.
All right.
Hell yeah, free shit.
Yep.
Interesting.
Yep.
You had me confused on the, it's oddball true crime, but not crime. But I get it.
You get it now?
I get it. That was cool.
Yeah, they've had that one on my list for a while. I don't know, like, this is like super short. I'll save it for when we need a short episode instead of just reposting something.
Short and sweet.
Yep.
Love the short and sweet episodes.
Mm-hmm. Because usually when I say, oh, this is going to be a short one, 45 minutes later, you know, or an hour later basically happens.
Yeah. That's a good one, though.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Because I was being, you know, talking to some of our veteran friends about it. They're like, oh, what's next week's episode? It's like Operation Flagship. They're like, I've never heard of that. It's like, yeah, because it's not a military operation. It's not? No, it's not. It's a federal, you know, federal law enforcement agency operation of sorts. They're like, well, don't tell me about it. I want to hear about it. I'm like, okay, that's all I'm going to tell you.
Yeah. They're going to hear it and be like, what?
Mm-hmm.
That's fucking great.
Yep.
People are that stupid or greedy.
Right. Oh, but one thing I forget to tell you. What do you think Poño stands for in Spanish?
Fish.
Nope.
No?
Fist Airlines.
Poño?
P-U-N-O. I can't speak Spanish
correctly. Oh, Poño.
Poño Airlines. There we go.
Stands for, it means?
Fist Airlines.
Fist. So the same thing that happened in Miami was from these same people?
Yep.
Oh.
Yeah, it's the U.S. Marshal's Office.
Oh.
But yeah, Fist Airlines. So yeah, even in other operations, they still had fun with it other than Mr. Zip.
Dun, dun, dun.
Couldn't find any information on why it was called Mr. Zip, unfortunately. It was just like one little paragraph on Wikipedia and the U.S. Marshals website about it. And that was it. There was no other real information.
This whole episode, All I kept thinking every time you said Fist was Mr. Fister. Your gun from Fallout.
No, that was Fistel's Revenge, the power fist with the...
No, you called it Mr. Fister.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh, no. That's what I call my power fist in Fallout 76 was Fistel's Revenge.
Yeah, yeah. But there was something you had in Fallout that you were playing.
Yeah, it's a power fist with the armor with the puncturing mod on it for the great, to ignore like 50% armor.
Mr. Fister.
So, because there was a robot in Fallout New Vegas called Mr. Fisto.
Oh, I thought you did it being funny because it goes on your wrist.
No, because they're in Fallout New Vegas. One of the casinos wants you to get a robot for clients to have sex with, and the robot was called Mr. Fisto.
Okay.
And one of the funny things is like there's a dialogue option for test the robot, and the robot like please assume the position, and then it like fades to black, and all you hear is like drill sounds and buzzing like tool sounds and whatnot, and it's like
fuck.
Yeah. So yeah, that's why I renamed my power fist that I used in Fallout 76 with the puncturing armor mod, Fistel's Revenge.
Lugosi's laying right there, but I swore to God that was Lugosi right there. Fucking feet.
With all that out of the way, I think it's time we get out of the Emporium for the day. What do you think?
I agree too. You got batteries to charge.
Yep. So until next time,
remember to creep it real.
Stay spooky.
Join our Facebook group by searching Macabre Emporium. Like and subscribe on YouTube at Macabre Emporium Podcast. Follow us on TikTok at Macabre Emporium Pod. Follow us on Twitter at Macabre Emporium. If you have any stories of the paranormal, your local true crime, or weird history that you would like us to look into and possibly do an episode on, email us at macabreemporiumpod@gmail.com. And remember to follow, rate, review, and share whenever and wherever you can to help us grow our podcast.